Welcome to the OA Light a Candle Meeting Podcast. Visit our website at www.oalaig.org, where you'll find several speaker feeds with over 400 speaker files, forms for ordering CDs for these speakers, and a place to donate to keep this special service active. I would now like to introduce our speaker for tonight, Amy.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amy.
Hi, Amy.
Oh, God, and I'm so nervous. And I was leaving my condo. I'm not going to call it a house because it's not a house. I was leaving my condo, and my husband's like, how long have you been going there? 25 years. 25 years. I came in when I was 22, and thank God. Thank God. And, you know, when you're going to speak for 35 minutes, you feel like, what do I have to say? And then I realized, like, I wouldn't have a life if it wasn't for you guys, if it wasn't for OA. It's the very fabric of my existence. And because it's so ingrained, you know, and I live between my ears, I think, like, I don't really have much recovery, but recovery is my whole life. So I'll just start at the beginning because I have so much time. But I grew up, my dad was alcoholic. My mom was, I guess you would call her an untreated Al-Anon. For the newcomer, that means she was very judgmental, very critical. Things had to be a certain way. And my sister was 16 months older, and she was always very skinny. So my reference point was this skinny sister, and I always felt fat. From the get-go, I felt fat. And I probably was a chubby baby, but actually a really normal-sized kid. And, but I remember very early on, like as young as 3, wanting to be my sister. And I remember my little thighs would rub together at the beach, and I'd be like, this is not going to happen when I'm a grown up. Like, I remember thinking this when I was really young. Then they started counting her French fries and counting my French fries. Like, I decided I will eat what she eats to look like her, kind of thing. And my parents just giggled. Nobody really knew what was going on. And then my sister used to sing me fat songs, which didn't help. And, yeah, every night she would sing me fat songs. And then I told my dad. My dad was like 44 when I was born. So I just figured he's this old dude that lives in the house. But when I went and told him, I'm like, she's singing me fat songs up there. And I was crying. And he's like, Jesus Christ. And he ran upstairs and he screamed at her. And I was like, this guy is cool, right? So that began a lifelong alliance with the alcoholic. So it was kind of like my dad and I were buds, and my mom and my sister were the perfect ones. And I always had like this, like, they would go on a trip, and my dad would be like, the officers are gone, and he'd get loaded. And, like, the place was crazy. But I always felt like this shame, like, they're the good ones, we're the screwed up ones. Like, my dad was fat, I loved food, my dad drank, my sister and my mom were perfect. And anyway, now my dad's dead, so I'm stuck with those two. But they're in Boston, so that's good. So anyway, fast forward, I loved food. I loved it. I don't feel like I overate as a kid, but it was like, that's what I looked forward to. You know, if we were going on a family trip, I really didn't care where we were going. I just was like, what are we going to eat? And then I, like, you know, when I got into middle school, I would pick my friends based on the food. You know, like, my friend and I would just go binge out. And then this other girl, I remember I grew up in Boston, and she took me to the Cape, and it took her like a half hour to eat a hot dog. And I was like, are you kidding me? Like, I was so lonely. That's the feeling I had. It wasn't like, wow, she really nursed that hot dog. It was more like, she doesn't eat, I'm lonely. I can't wait to get home. Like, I can't wait to get home so I can eat. And I think it really started becoming a problem in high school. You know, I think the first year of high school, I got a lot of attention from boys. The second year of high school, I was old news. And that's when I really started, like, binging. And I would say I struggled with depression. You know, I just, my junior year of high school, it was like, I kept the food journals. I was jump roping every morning. I was measuring everything. And then I would fast for 3 days, and then I would binge. And everybody in my high school was, like, trying to throw up, taking speed. The whole thing, it was just, like, kind of a nightmare. And I just remember, like, I lost, like, the ability to control it. Like, I remember going to school and I'd be like, okay, I'm going to be like her. I'm just going to have a donut during first period and then go about my day till lunch. Well, if I had a donut first period, I was back at the snack bar, back at the snack bar, back at the snack bar. And then I was so full and disgusting, I would literally just walk home 4 miles. And then if I got tired on the way home, I would take a nap in the woods. Like, I grew up in suburbia in Massachusetts. It was like this crazy private world. And nobody knew. Like, nobody knew. My parents didn't know. And then I had, my dad was like, I don't know, he was old, but he was a hippie. And I remember him being like, he loved women, he loved sex, he loved the whole thing, and he would talk about it when he was drunk. And my mom was very, like, she was, like, perfect, and of course she was, like, a virgin when she married him and all this. But I was so confused about the whole thing, so I decided I would go take care of that when I was 16. And I did. And my friend was supposed to take care of it, too, but she didn't. And that's when something switched in me. Like, after that experience, I was so devastated because it was with this older person who did not care one iota about me. And that's when, like, the anorexia took over. Because I was like, oh, my God, I'm out of control. I just felt like I needed to control something. And I dieted, and I lost so much weight so quickly, but I couldn't stop. Like, it was awful. Like, to this day, it still feels traumatic. Like, anorexia still feels traumatic to me, even though I would say I haven't been an active anorexic in, what, 20 years? But I still can't believe something could take me over like that. Like, you know, so the diet didn't end, and my parents didn't do much because they were Irish Catholic, and it's like, as long as everything looks good, we're not going to talk about it. And, you know, and they would, like, my mom would make me food, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm going to eat it in my room, and I'd, like, put it in a paper bag and chuck it out in the field. Like, I ate at work. I was just, it was constant lying, constant secretive, so isolated, so lonely. And then I remember my senior year in high school, I met a boy, and I decided I wanted to be normal, or at least have some curves, because I was, like, skeletal, and so but I didn't know how to eat. Like, I didn't know how to gain the weight, and I was scared to gain the weight, so I remember thinking, well, I'll just do my routine, and then on the days I don't work, I'll eat normal. Well, then what happened was I was so hungry, the days I was going to eat normal, I was binging. So it was like starve days, binge days, starve days, binge days. My whole life was about this. It was insane. So I'd see my boyfriend, and I'd eat anything he wanted, but I wasn't present because I couldn't wait to get home to bed to eat some more on the binge day. And the binge day didn't end until sunrise the next day. You know what I'm saying? So it'd be like, get home, eat till you can't breathe, fall asleep, but if you wake up before the alarm goes off, you can eat some more. Like, it was so crazy. It was so, so crazy. I just want to say I curse a lot, which I'm not proud of, but I'm not cursing, so it's kind of weird. So if I pause, it's because I want to say something. You all know me. You all know I curse. So this is kind of a new experience. I did give up cursing 4 years ago for like 30 days, and I felt so good. I felt so good and so mature, and I don't know why I took it back. Anyway, so I feel kind of mature right now, not quite like myself. Anyway, so what happened next? So I did the whole thing through college, too. I starved and binged, starved and binged, starved and binged. And, like, I would have these black moods on the starving days where I just didn't want to talk to anybody. Then Thursday at 4 o'clock, it was happy hour, and then the binge would last all weekend. And I was, like, the social director. It was crazy. It was like having two... Anyway, it was horrible, and I also was a person you would not want to be friends with. You'd think you would because I was fun, but I would steal from you. Like, if you left any cash around, it'd be in my pocket. I would gossip about you. Like, I didn't have, like, a moral fabric. I didn't have, I don't know. I didn't know, like, right from wrong. Like, you'd think I would get that from my mom, and I think on some level I did. Like, I had a good heart, but I just didn't have, my dad was alcoholic. He was an untreated alcoholic, and he stole things. I don't know. I just, I credit the person I am today with these rooms, bar none, that's it. So anyway, I got help in college because I got kicked out of the dorms. I won't tell you why. Well, I'll tell you why, because my boyfriend peed off my balcony, and I got kicked off. I got kicked out of the dorms, and then I was completely insane. I was living off campus by myself. I no longer had roommates to lie to, like about eating, because they'd always ask me, oh, I already ate, and I'd like get something from the commuter cap and throw it down the laundry chute. I threw so many subs down the laundry chute, it was disgusting. Anyway, off campus, I had this exercise bike. It was insane. I would like ride the bike 2 miles, go to class, ride the bike 2 miles, like, it was never enough, you know, and I was crazy, and I was so scared, and nobody was checking up on me, and I got into therapy. And I'll be really honest with you. My senior year in college, my friend said, why don't you go to OA? And I was like, I'm not going to OA, because to me, it meant it was going to be a bunch of overweight people, and I wouldn't fit in. So I didn't go. It took me 2 more years to get here because it's called OA. Like, if it was called anything, like Compulsive Eaters Anonymous, I would have been there. I really would have. But I just felt like it wasn't going to work for me. And I'm kind of bummed about that. But I'm very lucky I did get in at such a young age. So after college, I went home for graduate school. And, you know, back at, like, the scene of the crime. And I kind of walked into OA, and I related, but I didn't want to fully engage. But I would say my first few months, I went to like one meeting a week, and then I started really getting into it, and I got a sponsor who was bulimic and very strict with her food, and I came from really rigid. I had so many rules, it was gross. And so my food kind of got worse before it got better. Like, I started binging more. But I think, too, like, the disease probably tries to hang on a little harder when you're going to get help. So it got way worse before it got better. And I wanted to go to a treatment facility, but my insurance wouldn't cover it. So I remember telling, I was in graduate school, I remember telling my supervisor at my internship, I'm like, I'm binging, I'm crazy, I'm going to take 2 weeks. And he's like, you do whatever you have to do. And I did, and I went to a meeting every day, do my own little rehab. But, yeah, I thank God for OA. So I will say this, though, my first 4 years in, and you guys might be bored by this if you've heard me before, but my first 4 years in, I went to step five twice. Like, I got friends, and I felt so scared to do step four, but I did it. And then step five, you feel like you lost, like, 1,000 pounds because you're like, oh, my God, I told her all my crazy, and she still thinks I'm cool. And everything was better in my life, but the mental obsession with the food didn't really lift for me. And I remember 4 years in, I guess I was in New York, and I was talking to this girl. I'm like, I think about food all day, every day, like, or my body. It's, like, insane. And my food was pretty good. Like, I'd be abstinent for long periods, then I'd overeat one night. Like, it wasn't so bad. It was just the mental obsession was like a prison. And I remember all these people in New York were doing this, I don't know, these big book workshops where you go to step seven and, like, in, like, 5 weeks or something. Like, a direct descendant from the big book. I don't know who, but I was like, I'm in. And I did it, and that is when the miracles really occurred for me. That's when, and I wrote down this definition, that's when there's a definition in the big book of the spiritual experience. That's when I had a personality change sufficient enough to bring about recovery from alcoholism. I developed a God consciousness. And that's the truth. It's really when I went through to step seven, and then we did 8, 9, and lived in 10, 11, and 12. But when I did that, like, I couldn't engage in not only the food, but all my defects that I was aware of at the time. Like, of course, there's more. Every year I'm introduced to some more. But the point is, like, I couldn't go out and gossip about a friend all night and feel okay the next day. I had already given up stealing, but I just couldn't act in defect and feel okay. Like, I got, like, a degree of what you call emotional sobriety. Like, I started to like who I was. And I don't know, the obsession with the food lifted. Like, it really lifted. Like, I didn't have to think about it all day. And so, I mean, I'm not going to say it's been perfect since then. I still would get long periods of abstinence and then blow it one night. And I remember my husband proposed, gosh, I guess, I don't know, I got in 1990, he proposed in 90, I don't remember when he proposed, 97 maybe, and I remember, like, everything's good, I'm abstinent, and then he took me away for a weekend, and I thought about the food all weekend, and I overate, and I ran 6 miles and got lost, and I'm like, what? And I realized that those first few years of dating with him, anytime we had, like, intimate time together, I'd think about the food. And I just know for me, you guys, it's like, it's my lens. It's like, it protects me from intimacy. It, you know, this guy's scary. He could hurt me. Let me just think about the food. And, you know, thank God that doesn't happen anymore. But I started counting days again. No, I started counting days for the first time on my honeymoon because I got married and it was weird. I don't know. We didn't eat much at the wedding, who does? But then we got back to the hotel room and I was like, I was eating wedding cake and counting my money and I think it's really anorexic because I couldn't believe, like, we lived out here, we got married in Boston, all our friends from New York came, like, everybody came to celebrate me, and I so had so much shame and struggled with I'm not enough, all that stuff that comes with this gross disease. And I just remember going to bed, and I'm not even bulimic, and saying, like, I can't sleep, I had too much sugar, I better vomit. And I remember throwing up on my wedding night, and I was so depressed the next day. My mom threw this wonderful brunch for us, so much more love, and I completely hated myself. I wasn't even present, I hated myself, you guys know the feelings. It's just complete demoralization. You want to die. Like, I wanted to die. I'm like, okay, here I am at my wedding brunch. I'm going on my honeymoon, and I hate myself and want to die. It was awful. So I came back, and my sponsor said, start counting days. And ever since then, September 3rd, 1998, it's been back to back. And I don't, I wouldn't say it's perfect, but I've never been uncomfortably hungry, and I've never been uncomfortably full since that day. And that's just the truth. I mean, there's been times where, like, I love soda, but I kind of gave it up, but now my husband runs a soda company. We won't talk about that. But there's been times where, like, I've been on vacation, and maybe I have more soda, or, you know, things like that. It's so not perfect, but ever since that day, I never took the fork in the road. Because for me, those first, like, 5 to 7 years, it was always like, I'd be out at a restaurant, I've been abstinent for a while, I'm thin, what's the big deal? And then I'd take that fork, and then I'd hate myself. It wasn't like a full-out binge, but it was enough to, like, to me it doesn't have to be a binge. If it's between you and God, and it causes self-hate, and puts you in the cycle, then you broke your abstinence. You know what I mean? And only, you know, only you can answer that inside. So I'm very grateful. I'm so grateful for my abstinence. I'm so grateful that I can go to a buffet today. I know exactly what to do. I'm so grateful that when somebody invites me somewhere, I'm not thinking about the food. I'm thinking about the company. I'm so grateful I have a clear head. I have 3 awesome kids. I have a sweet husband. I have 2 careers that I love. It's not about the food for me anymore. It just isn't. I mean, do I still love it? Yes, of course I love it. My dinner is my favorite time of day. But it's not, it's just not center stage, you know? It's not center stage anymore. Like, when I'm lonely, I call somebody. I don't eat, you know? If I'm having big feelings, which I'm known to do, the feelings are here, my food stays the same. Like, that's the recovery. And, you know, when I did the Big Book study in New York, it was interesting. It was like this militant way of taking you through the Big Book. And they made us underline all through the Big Book. Bill says, like, people can and do recover. And after you did this study, you'd have to go to a meeting and say, hi, I'm Amy, and I'm recovered. you wouldn't say, hi, I'm Amy, anorexic and compulsive overeater. So the point was, they said, and I don't know, that you recover, but you stay because it's not just about the substance. It's about the personality. I have the big book personality, bar none. So it's not about the food so much for me. It could be. It could be on a dime if I ever leave this program or let things slide. But, you know, whenever I go to the big book meetings now, I do my thinking. Like, my thinking is, I have alcoholic thinking. Untreated, I have alcoholic thinking. I have my pickups, you know, I don't need to go into them, but I, you know, a couple years it was my marriage, a couple years it was this, it's that. It's like, I have my pickups. My brain wants to go to, you know, what I'm not doing right, where's my cash and prizes, did God forget about me, I want my way. You know, I'm that person. I want to run the show. So this program keeps me in humility, it keeps me in gratitude, it keeps me in acceptance, and it keeps me present. So it's interesting. I wrote down, because I haven't really read a lot about them, but, you know, I looked up the horsemen and the bedevilment, because the horsemen, you know, terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. That's what I lived before I got here. Like, that is just really what I lived. I mean, I looked like I had a life. I always had friends. I always had a boyfriend. But, like, between my ears, that's where I lived. You know, and I was never present with you. I was never present. If we were out drinking, having a good time, I was thinking about what I was going to eat when I got home. Like, that's it, you know. You know, the reason I come is because I'm going to read the bedevilments to you. We were having trouble with personal relationships. We couldn't control our emotional natures. We were prey to misery and depression. We couldn't make a living. We had a feeling of uselessness. We were full of fear. We were unhappy. We couldn't seem to be of real help to other people. That's me if I don't work this program. That really is me. You know, I've been married I've been with my husband for 20 years, and I got to tell you, like, when I first met him, I kind of thought I was together. Like, I'd been coming here for a while, and I worked the steps, and I had friends, and was, you know, abstinent a lot of the time, and whole slew of defects came up when I met him, and I joined another program, but I was very reactive. Like, I was very reactive when I met him. You know, something would happen, and I had no pause between event and me having, like, an emotional reaction. And that's just like the food. You know, when I got here, there was no pause between feeling food. Like, there was no space, you know. And, like, when I met my husband, there was no pause between feeling boarded out and kill the relationship, you know. So to me, that's a bedevilment, and I'm still capable of it if I'm not in fit spiritual condition. And then we were prey to misery and depression. It's true. It's like I every day focus on gratitude and the things I'm doing well, because if I don't, I'm prone to depression. I don't know, my dad was definitely depressed, and he used to say, oh, you're just like me, you're going to be depressed all your life. Oh, and I'm also going to be fat, he told me. Like, he's like, you're like me, you're going to gain weight, you're going to be depressed. Like, he told me this. But, you know, it doesn't have to be true for me. You know, it really doesn't have to be true. We couldn't make a living, and we had a feeling of uselessness. Yeah, I mean, it's really true. If I listen to my first thought up here a lot of the times, I do feel useless. I really do. I don't feel good enough. I feel like I have nothing to offer. You know, I always think, like, I have to go with my second thought, because my second thought is my recovered thought. You know, like, my first thought is usually, I don't know, it's even, like, at work, like, I don't kind of want to say what I do, but there's, like, a possibility of, like, grabbing a few extra bucks, let's put it that way. And my first thought is, oh, just a few bucks, it'll pay for my parking. That's my first thought. Amy, what? 25 years later? So I have to go with my second thought. Yeah, okay, this 10 bucks is really worth my serenity. It's worth blowing my program. Like, I have to be constantly vigilant to, like, because I'm an addict. I want to do what I can get away with. I want the easier, softer way. Like, the whole thing. And, you know, full of fear. Yeah, that was me, unhappy. We couldn't seem to be a real help to other people. I was so self-centered. You know, it was all about me. What's in it for me? How can I get you to do what I want? The whole thing. Like, that's who I am without the program. So I want to talk a little bit about how I work my program today. I really want to tell you I wake up at 6 and just meditate and like and then I have a little altar. It's not true. I don't have any of that. What I do is I have three kids that I got to get to three different schools, and I love sleep. So what I do is I set my alarm and I lay in bed and I get my head on. I call it getting my head on for the day because I got to get my head on every day, and sometimes it takes more than others because I really am chemically and hormonally challenged. I'm 47. There you go. So what I do in bed is I lay there and I do my AEIOU for the newcomers. That's abstinence exercise. What did I do for myself? What did I do for others? What did I uncover yesterday? So I do that. Then I do 5 gratitudes from the day before. I do 5 things I did well, and then I do 5 things I'm powerless over. Then I get out of bed. Then I, after I dump them at school, I usually take a walk or do whatever I need to do, and I get quiet, and I set an intention for the day, and I call so many OA people, I probably make 3 or 4 phone calls a day. I get voicemail. It's not like I gab all day. I don't have time. But anyway, the point is I set an intention for the day. So if it's like, if I'm going to work, it's really to be of service and be calm and professional and get out of self. You know, if I am spending the day with my kids, it's usually to have patience and be present. Whatever. So I set an intention. And then every day, and I'm lucky, and I know this is not possible for other people, but every day, probably around 2 o'clock, middle of the day, I turn everything off and I read something spiritual. Sometimes it's programs, sometimes it's outside literature, and I meditate, and I usually lay down, and then I do that every day, every single day. It kind of just recalibrates me for the rest of the day, and I have a very busy mind. Like, I'm always thinking, like, what does she need? What does he need? Like, I'm always, you know, what do I want? How can I get it? You know, I have that brain. And so I quiet my mind every day, and then it just sets me straight with God. I would say most days I'm in constant prayer. I do have ups and downs. I think that's probably chemical and probably part of the reason I have an eating disorder. I didn't just decide to have one. I think I was born chemically challenged. And so, like, last week was a really good example. Like, I was really happy on Monday. Felt great, you know. And then Tuesday I had the same life, and I was just not great. I just was kind of low. And, you know, I used to, like, analyze that, dwell on it, try to figure it out, and then hate myself because you have a good life. Why are you in such a bad mood? And I don't do that anymore. I just say, like, okay, God's going to lift this. I'm just going to treat it like a cold, do my program, and go about my business. And my day goes a lot better. But I also, when I'm in that place and I have to show up, it's painful because I feel like the outside doesn't match the inside, because when you're inside battling the depression and people are responding to you like you're kind of cool, you're like, you have no idea what's going on. Like, it's hard. And Friday I was like that. Like, Friday I had to show up for some things and I was just in it, you guys. I woke up in it and I was like, oh my gosh, you know. And but I just showed up, and I personally will repeat, like, and I'm not like a Bible thumper by any stretch, but there's certain things in the Bible I'll just repeat over and over, like, you know, and I don't know, it helps me a lot. It really helps me a lot. So I guess I'm almost out of time. I guess what I want to say is I'm just so grateful for the 12 steps. I really am, because I know there's people that find religion, but they're like, well, I like it, but I don't agree with this, or they, whatever. Like, I feel like I agree with every single thing in the 12 steps, 12 traditions. I agree with all of it, and it works for me. Oh, I think I'll share about this. So recently, my husband has a neurological disorder, and we took this class and for 4 weeks, and it was really fun. A program friend of mine was teaching it, and we took it, but it was a lot about visualizing. And visualizing's good, but it's a little dangerous for me, because she's like, just write everything you want, just write it and believe you can have it, and oh, I'm like, hi, you know. And so anyway, the good news is there was a lot of praying going on, and my husband's problem got a lot better, which is kind of amazing, because he's not in the rooms, and he's not very, he's probably more spiritual than he thinks, but anyway, that was cool. But after that workshop, I kind of crashed a little, and I was like, I must be doing it wrong, because I'm not getting all the things I want. Like, it was just like, and then it puts me to like, well, maybe God just forgot about me. Like, you know, and it's just not good for me. Like, I want to be that person, like, this is what I want, it feels great, thank you for giving it to me, now let it go. I can't do it. I'm an addict. So I know for me, I'm better on a 12-step diet. Like, I'm better to kind of ignore all that other shit out there. Oh, I did it. It had to happen. Sorry. Gonna have to beat me. It had to happen at some point. But anyway, the point is, I'm better on a 12-step diet. And I do need to say, too, like, 2015, I wrote some goals down, and I did write my goals, and I prayed every morning, and then I let them go. And it's been really powerful, because one was about my marriage, one was about career, you know, whatever. But what it does is it kind of causes me to do things in alignment with those goals, you know. And I'm so grateful, because God really does lift things. Like, I've had some stories, like, about one, my marriage, you know, things about me, like things about career. I've had some stories, and when you think the same negative story over and over, it kind of becomes like a thing, entrenched, so it's easy to jump to it. And I can't change those types of things on my own. And I'm telling you, when I pray, like, God, change me from within, just change me in this relationship, just change me, because I'm the problem, it always works. Like, and I don't know it's working, until one day I wake up and I'm like, wow, I don't engage in that story anymore. You know, and the magic of this program is I haven't really had to white knuckle a lot. If I share something in the rooms and I really share truthfully, it takes the shame out of it, and then it insidiously changes. And I think that's the magic, is that we're not alone. And now I feel like I'm totally rambling, so I'm going to shut it. And that's it. So I love you. Actually, I'm going to read one page to you guys, because I heard it the other day, and it really, it's February 23rd. And it talks about the program. It says, why is it so much harder for me? I go to meetings, but I still don't have what attracted me in the first place. Let me look honestly at what I'm doing and failing to do. Do I have a sponsor, one who has what I want? Do I really listen at meetings and try to contribute? Am I working the program beyond step 3? Am I trying to practice the principles of the program at home and at work as well as in OA? Do I have a personal concept of a higher power that works for me? Am I still trying to diet, i.e. manipulate and control my food and my weight? Do I follow suggestions such as weigh only once a month? Have I ever called a newcomer or another OA member? Do I give some form of service? Do I ever express gratitude for having come this far? For today, I can begin now to follow those directions that seem to work for others and that I have been resisting. And I will say this, I don't talk to my sponsor often because we both are married with 3 kids and busy, but I love her, because if I call her with any shenanigans, she's like, are you getting to 3 meetings a week and doing 2 service commitments? And I'm like, okay. She doesn't want to hear my stuff unless I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. And I love that, you know. I need to do that with my sponsees, but that's another problem. And that's it. I'm really done. So I guess there's time for questions, if anybody has a question. How do I do my food? So, I don't write it down. I pretty much, gosh, it's so automatic for me. That's probably part of my compulsion, but it sort of looks one way during the week and then another way on the weekend. There's some things I measure. I guess I would say I measure, but more eyeball. I don't eat in between meals. I probably have 3 meals and 2 snacks. And I don't have big rules, to be honest with you. I'm not going to eat cake every night. It's not going to work for me. If I go on a vacation and there's a lot of desserts, I cannot do it maybe once. It's just not worth it for me because of the mental head games. And I don't really want it. Like, I have a really pretty good diet, so I don't feel like I'm missing anything. And I don't know if this works for anybody else, but I come from being anorexic and having a lot of rules. Like, I don't have rules. Like, at restaurants, I just eat whatever I feel like eating. But I couldn't always do that. So it took a while. Is that it? We're done. Okay.